What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 166. Scott, cheers. This is a live in-person podcast.
We're actually going on Periscope now as well. We're going to... This is the first time we've done it since spring training.
Right. We've only done it at spring training.
And it was a complete shit show the last time. Well, it was a complete shit show the first time. The second time, audio not so good, video not so good, but right. We got it done.
You're in Boston. I'm in Boston. We figured let's make this work. I just came from the office. You told me that you're near Fenway Park. Dude, you can see Fenway Park from your window.
I wasn't lying.
That's sacrilegious.
I can literally throw a rock and hit Fenway. There's dudes parking like right on the street for $50 to go to the game.
We're doing a Yankees podcast within like visible sight of Fenway Park. There's a Boston poster back here. This is a shit show, but
it's not in my apartment. I don't pick the thing. It's not a Red Sox poster. It's just a Boston, the city of.
Right.
Which I got nothing against the city of Boston. I got something against their baseball team and their football teams, which unfortunately you like. But the city's actually been good to me. I did a live Instagram the other day of walking. I have a commute from here to the hospital pretty much every day. I walk. It's about a 15-minute walk. And every day I gear out in all my Yankee stuff.
I was going to say that. I love you're rocking the Unleash the Kraken.
Yeah, I saw you
with the Rebuild the Empire shirt on.
I got a brand new Yankee hat, nice and shiny, with the biggest emblem I could find. So, yeah, it's been good. It's been a good walk, too, every time.
As many people know, I've lived in Boston for 7 years. Never felt weird about rocking Yankee gear. But now I feel like, as we talked about last episode, that might start to change and people will give you shit again for wearing Yankees gear. Because I think the hatred is coming back. It's been long enough. Every Jeter was going out. Ortiz was going out. There were a bunch of farewell tours. Puke, but whatever. All that's in the past now. A-Rod's no longer there. He was the most hated Yankee for Red Sox fans. Ortiz is no longer there. He was the most hated Red Sox for Yankees fans. Now there's some young blood we can all hate. They can hate Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge. We can hate Benintendi and Betts and all those guys. It's great. And we still hate all the veterans like Hanley Ramirez, that scumbag.
Hanley Ramirez is awful. Pedroia, I kind of wish Pedroia was still in the mix. He seems to be hurt every other day now. But I always enjoyed hating him because he was a guy that would always be that thorn in the side forever. I actually had some respect. He was one of the guys that I respected because of, I think, his stature and everything he comes. He's a pretty ugly dude, too, which I probably was rough through
hideous,
life.
Hideous.
Yeah, ugly. So, I mean, he had to be good at something. Baseball was the one. He was clutch. He's short. Good for him. I kind of was like, okay. You know,
yeah,
like,
if he wasn't
I hated when he was up because I was scared of him. But I had some respect. But, yes, the rivalry is definitely feeding back into it. I can definitely – I mean, I'm walking through. I have a blanket for my son that I put on the bed. And it's got a huge Yankee logo on it. And every single person that walks in there like, what is this? And I'm constantly getting a lot of shit for wearing the Yankee hat. And but to tell you the truth, it's been a lot of good ribbing back and forth. I've met some people that are diehard Red Sox fans. And we've had some good arguments basically about baseball. And that's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's coming back. And it was evident over the weekend. As we already said on the last episode. But I think you and I were both in like a delirious state when we were recording after that Sunday night baseball game. You just told me before we started, we pressed record, that you don't even remember what you said because you were half asleep. I was pissed off. Like, I was watching the game going on. Chapman was out there walking guys in the 10th inning. Like, so it didn't really process with me how much fun that weekend was, but also how devastating that weekend was to have lost. Like, they come back on Friday night.
Right.
They win a game. They pull it out of their ass. You didn't think they're going to win that game. And then you're like, we've got Severino going tomorrow. This is great. We're going to at least win two out of three. Our ace is going tomorrow. Before their ace goes in Chris Sale, we got this in the bag.
Who we're 2-0 against, just saying.
Right.
I mean, we've done it before. It's happened.
Severino shits the bed.
Shits the bed.
But Monty steps up.
Yes, he does.
Monty steps up. He keeps them in that game. The Yankees scratch and claw. Classic what they used to do against Pedro. They never hit Pedro, but they also were always in the game against Pedro, and they'd knock him out 6th, 7th inning. They'd get to the bullpen. They'd win it 3-2. That was a classic, like, late 90s, early 2000s win against Pedro. And that's what it was shaping up to be on Sunday night until Chapman gives up the home run.
So there's something that's really bothering me that's still, it's a Girardi thing. It's been a Girardi thing forever. I was calling for it after Benintendi hit the second home run off of Luis Severino because Severino was practically giving him the inside of the plate. It was really pissing me off, the fact that they didn't go after. And I'm not saying that you have to hit the guy, because you don't have to hit the guy. But what you do have to do is you have to establish yourself as a dominant ace pitcher, and that's your plate. Establish the inside of the corner so that you can throw that slider on the inside of the corner and they're not sitting all over it and waiting for it. Right. You throw a fastball at the hands. Doesn't need to be at the head, doesn't even need to be at the body,
right.
But at the hands, they will back up, and there's a little bit of a question then at that point when they see 99 buzz under their chin.
You don't need to go full rage like Clemens used to and throw up Piazza's head.
It's not necessary.
Like that. But you can knock a guy on his ass.
No
and
doubt.
If it comes to hitting him, just drill him in the middle of the back.
Yeah.
No one has a problem with that.
Exactly. And again, you don't have to hit them. People were giving me shit about like hitting the guy like, oh, I'm not going to do it. It's not the point. The point is controlling the at-bat. If Severino wants to be that guy and be this dominant ace for a long time, especially in a hard-fought rivalry with the Yankees, Red Sox, and the AL East, you got to show a little bit of freaking attitude when you're going up against your rival. And especially when a dude comes up and already takes you deep for a three-run shot.
Benintendi is shaping up to be one of my most hated Red Sox of all time. Because he's got that like pretty boy look. He's got the flowing hair. And I just know I'm going to hate his fucking guts.
The one thing, is it him and Mookie who do the little dumbass patty cake thing?
Yeah, they do the Michael Jackson, like, Thriller.
Oh, is that what it is? I just see patty cake. I didn't even know it was, like, a whole thing. I saw them, like, slapping hands. I thought it was, like, I don't know. It's terrible. I think we talked about this in the last one, actually. I don't remember talking about it as much.
Right. Well, we're
basically
recapping what we did at the end of last episode.
I've talked about this.
So, like, what we didn't realize was going on was our boy Joe's McFly going viral on Sunday night with his reaction of the Chapman
home
run.
I saw him on Periscope too. So shout out to Joe. That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. He was one of our first listeners, one of our first followers of Bronx Pinstripes. So I thought it was awesome and hilarious at the same time. He handled it like a champ.
Yeah.
Because he was getting killed by Red Sox fans. And then he does it like he goes and last night when Chapman gives up the home run, he's got another fan reaction video. The dude's on SportsCenter this morning. Like, all over the place, but it just, like, ripped. Like, I watched that video, because I didn't go back on Twitter after we recorded.
Yeah.
Once we were done recording, I'm like, screw this.
It was almost 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm done with Yankees for the night. I wake up in the morning, and I watch his video, and just the guts ripped out of him on that reaction. It's what we all felt. Like, that is why sports are awesome.
Yes.
Because it's
an emotional roller coaster.
It's an emotional roller coaster. You're in that game, and it's not even a playoff game. It's just a game against the Red Sox. Rivalry week. We're buying into rivalry week.
Hey.
But, yeah, your guts are ripped out. That's why it's awesome.
The thing I think a lot of people don't realize about him and those videos is he does those videos all the time.
Right.
And it's not like he was doing it the second time just because of the first one. Like, he does them all the time. He's got a YouTube channel. He does he's constantly videotaping and doing the Yankee games and such. So it's not like this is something new to him. The dude is an emotional dude. I mean, we met him at the outing. He was sitting with us in right field. So he's an emotional Yankee fan, and I think we can absolutely relate to that.
Hell
because
yeah.
he just so happened to catch it on camera.
That's how we started doing this podcast, is because I was sick,
we wanted to talk
I was sick
about
of yelling at my TV. I figured I'd yell at you.
Yeah, it's better that way.
But the Yankees bounced back after that horrible loss to the Red Sox. They bounced back, and they won the first two games against the Mets. We're recording, obviously, before the game at Citi Field, the first game. But that's what the Yankees needed to do. The Mets are struggling. They've sold their entire team. Jay Bruce is gone. Addison Reed is gone. They gave up on the season. You have to pound the Mets, and that's what, so far, the Yankees are doing.
Yeah, they got to take advantage of this. I mean, set aside the fact that they're the Mets, the fact that it's a Subway Series, I'm glad they didn't get all caught up in that nonsense. What they are is a mediocre team coming into Yankee Stadium they need to take care of that job. That job needs to get done because you can't be losing too many games right now, especially the way that the Red Sox are winning, the fact that they took 2 out of 3, and the fact that we have this coming weekend a giant series now, which it's what's two in 2 weeks we have 6 games. So it's this weekend and then Labor Day weekend, I believe, back at the stadium. So that's a huge set.
Essentially 3 weeks, 10 games.
3 weeks, including this last one. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, you got to take care of business right now so that you can set yourself up to put yourself in a better position against the Red Sox, because that's the team you got to beat, because they're not going to lose a lot of games in the stretch.
I don't feel like the Red Sox are unbeatable, though. They're a very beatable team. I mean, they might be better than the Yankees, but I don't think it's by a lot.
I think what we saw early on was that their offense was not doing well.
Right, their offense
all.
Was clicking.
It was nothing. Clicking. And now you're seeing, you know, they're gap-to-gap guys. They don't hit a ton of home runs,
no.
But they hit the ball out of the park enough. And you're starting to see those numbers climb from, I mean, early in the season, they were, I think, dead last for a while in home runs. And now you're starting to see Hanley hit the ball out. Freaking Benintendi obviously hits the ball out. But these guys are fast, and they can score runs on you pretty quickly.
Other than Sale, who, though, in that rotation are you like, oh, shit, we gotta face this guy? Porcello? I'm not scared if Porcello takes the mound. David Price is injured, so...
I'm not scared of David Price.
Pomerance, Eduardo Rodriguez, like...
Well, apparently Eduardo Rodriguez is Sandy Koufax.
Well, see, here's the thing.
When he comes out, he was filthy against us.
This is a common trend with the Yankees, and Rafael Montero for the Mets on Monday shut them down for a few innings. That dude has a 6 ERA coming into the game. Dating back to, like, earlier in the month, they faced Jordan Zimmermann, who had a mediocre 5 ERA, Anibal Sanchez for Detroit, who also sucked, Trevor Bauer, who can't stop fiddling with drones, and, like, that's the guy that shuts you down.
Fingers dangling.
Yeah, he's fingering his drones, and, like, that's the guy that shuts you down? You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's apparently they are playing to their pitching competition, and that's what we did talk about.
It's
that.
Extremely frustrating.
And how they play to their competition. And, you know, it's kind of those along the same lines of the trend of whenever we see a pitcher for the first time. I mean, that dates back like 5 or 6 years, I feel like, as far as I can remember back, actually.
But that was a classic Yankees when they were the veteran Yankees.
Right.
They couldn't hit a rookie.
But they're still the Yankees. It's still happening.
It's the same uniform. Freaking, it's the same pinstripes.
Same brass, too.
There's only Brett Gardner in the lineup that was ever in
there. But one of the guys that is exactly the same dude that is at the helm, and that's another thing that we talked about. And honestly, he's becoming more and more on my shit list. Is Joe Girardi. I mean, he's becoming one of those guys now that, to me, he's not making a significant difference in any other way. I mean, it doesn't look like he's preparing these guys in a different way. Obviously, they're not ready for these pitchers that are mediocre. They're not being able to expose them for what they are. So I don't know what that is. And, you know, I understand you say a lot of it has to go to the player. No doubt about it. They swing the bat. They throw the ball. But you need to be prepared as well. And it's also the way you get prepared. And I think that is on the coaching staff.
What was, like, the one thing that we said we were excited for Girardi for? It was that he has a young team finally,
yes.
Right? Like, he worked well with the Marlins when he had a young team. And we're right. Like, okay, he won his championship with the Yankees, but that was a bought and paid for team. That was full of veterans. Like, I could have won the World Series with that team.
This was a team you can mold.
But this was a team, starting last August, was a team you could actually, like, get down and dirty with and, like, start to mold these guys. It looked like through June of this year.
It was working very well.
It was working perfectly. And then they started to skid, and nothing, like, he didn't do anything to change, like, change the momentum. He didn't shake anything up. Judge has been in the three hole for the entire, since the second half started, and the dude can't buy a hit. I mean, he struck out, now tied Adam Dunn's record for strikeouts in a consecutive game streak. Like, he has not done anything to shake up the lineup. I know coaches can only do so much. Girardi's not out there pitching. Girardi's not out there swinging the bat. But he's the one who can be like, okay, what I've done for 3 straight weeks isn't working. How about I try something different?
It's not in the binder. There's no chapter for him to. There's no blank chapter for him to write as he goes.
So there's
it's
no
all
chapter.
Written.
There's
it's
no chapter that says we're going to struggle. All the chapters are we're going to always win.
Yeah, that's it. Well, no, there is a chapter for if we struggle, and it's stay the course. It's one page. It says stay the course. They'll get through it.
Back of the baseball.
My guy. I know he'll hit. Chappie's one of the best. Chappie's going to be dominant again. That's how Chappie does. Chappie's a dominant closer. He's going to be a dominant closer again. That's stay the course. It's in the binder for that. But there's no ad-libbing. There's no going out there and trying something different because it just doesn't happen. Joe Girardi is too textbook.
Well, I understood that when he had a bunch of veterans that he didn't try something different. Like,
but it was because they were veterans, too.
Right. No.
He didn't want to piss people off because they had tenure and they had too much honor in moving him down out 100%. Of the two-hole.
100%. What does he owe these rookies? What does he owe? We all love Aaron Judge, but what does Girardi owe Aaron Judge
Nothing.
To keep him in the three hole?
He doesn't.
If you're not producing, go down to the sixth hole. And if you don't produce there, ride the bench.
And guess who's going to be mad about that? Nobody on that team. You think Aaron Judge is
going to... On the team. No,
you think Aaron Judge is going to balk at getting dropped down? He'll probably be like, yeah, I should have been dropped down 2 weeks ago.
Like... Didi's been their best hitter in the second half.
Yeah.
Didi probably should have been batting third for the last 2 weeks.
Well, for his credit, he has moved Didi
up. He's moved
up.
He's definitely
moved up.
But Didi's not a cleanup. Like, I also hate, like,
his left, right, left, right.
Cleanup hitter.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? Like, in lineups today, it's like whoever is hitting you go up. Like,
well, we had Gary Sanchez hitting in the two spot.
And like the
Schwarber's hitting the leadoff spot.
And Bautista hits leadoff for the Blue Jays.
It's so, all changed.
It's a shit show. But
Joe Maddon has completely screwed baseball as the normal thing of baseball. And everybody's following suit.
I was defending Judge in the three hole for a long time, and I was holding on for dear life by a thread.
It doesn't need to be a quick trigger. There's no doubt. It doesn't need to be a quick trigger.
It hasn't been a quick
trigger. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you're defending him early on. Like, no problem staying there. But after a while, after a certain amount of time, and again, I think this goes back to the eye test and just seeing how a guy is struggling and knowing your guy, then just dropping him down. The other side of that is what we also talked about is, does that make a damn difference on dropping him down to get him going?
No, it's not about the player. It's about the team.
It's about the lineup. It's about how the lineup is going
to
turn over.
Judge is going to need to figure his stuff out by doing extra work and getting his mind right. But he doesn't need to kill the team while he's doing that.
Right. Oh, I agree. I think that if you do send him down, it's, you know, sending a little bit of a message saying, hey, you do have to earn the spots, even if you had a ridiculous first half.
Send him down the lineup, not send him down.
Not to AAA. Send him down the lineup. Knock him down a few spots
in
the lineup.
Schwarber went down to AAA.
Yeah, not happening. We have too many guys going back and forth. We don't need Aaron Judge to do that, too. Even though some people on Twitter
he can't fit on the shuttle.
But yeah, no, dropping down does no harm. It really does no harm.
I wish I got another beer before we started recording.
We didn't think about that.
No, we didn't think about that. Chad Green comes in and is his dominant self. I don't know, like, the bullpen, and I know we're going to get into this later. We've got Dom coming on to do a stat segment later, and he's going to get into some bullpen numbers.
It went so well. Dom did such a good job that we're bringing him back.
But the bullpen has been filthy other than, it's like everything the bullpen was designed to be until you get to your $86 million man.
I mean, this is exactly what we were just talking about. Girardi not budging from his freaking binder and the way he does something. This is an absolute, first of all, the bullpen has been, Chad Green, like you were talking about, this guy has been a revelation for this team. I mean, he's really been a savior. Think about when the team was struggling, when the bullpen was terrible in July. Chad Green was the only guy actually doing anything and helping the team
out. He'd go two innings every time out and just strike out like four guys.
So he's absolutely turned a corner, and he has a very significant role in the bullpen moving forward for years to come, in my opinion. I think this guy is going to be a lock in that bullpen for a long time.
Well, that's why I tweeted this last night, that the Yankees have four closer-caliber relievers other than Chapman.
Yeah.
There's no reason to keep running out Chapman if it's not working.
Other than the contract, other than that he's dubbed the closer, that's the only
thing
that's there.
You're trying to win. You're trying to make the playoffs.
I'm with you.
You have Robertson, who was closed for a long time, and I think he's the logical choice.
And I think he's going.
Well, he's the closer tonight because Chapman and Betances aren't available. But you have Robertson, who was your closer, and then closed for a long time and has been great since he
comes. He was the closer he was in the back of the bullpen.
Yeah, couple stats. He's a 1.32 ERA in 13.2 innings pitched since coming back to the Yankees.
Yeah, welcome home, D-Rob.
He can be a closer. You've got Betances, who, despite what Randy Levine says, can be a closer.
Yes, he can.
You've got Chad Green, who I don't know if he can handle it mentally, but stuff-wise, he could be a closer. You've got Adam Warren, who, like, maybe not be a traditional closer, but if he needs to go out and save a game, I'm not shitting my pants.
No.
Why?
And you're missing a guy.
Canely.
Tommy Canely, who has one of the highest walk-to-strikeout ratios or walk-to-innings, whatever it is, in the major leagues. I mean, this guy has been phenomenal since he's come over. He's had a breakout year. He could absolutely slide in there. He seems like he's one of the guys with, like, some freaking nuts on him. I mean, he just feels like one of those guys that you can rely on that's going to go and throw BBs.
You've got closers hanging from a tree. Like, you can pick them off and just put them in the ninth inning. There's no reason to keep running. It's not like they have nobody else and they need Chad. It's not like if Mariano ever struggled like this, you'd be like, well, obviously we're not moving Mariano. Chapman is not Mariano.
Right.
They have guys behind.
Well, he is Mariano in the sense that he's gotten the contract, and that's why they're saying this.
They're not starting Jacoby Ellsbury, and he's making a boatload of money.
Why are we hitting on him? He just hit a home run. He just hit a home run.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, they have no excuse to keep running Chapman out there if it's not working.
Other than egg on face. I have a giant contract.
How much egg is on his face? If
90 million, what's the contract?
86 million.
86 million. So, look, yeah, I agree.
Phantom injury. I think phantom injury would be the route. And he limped off the field last
night.
He did,
but after in the post-game interviews, he's like, it's nothing. He laughed when they said he'd miss it.
But then
Girardi was like, but the lower half is very important. And if your lower half is not perfect, then things can struggle on top of that.
Classic, like, it'd be like Bill Belichick, what he puts on his injury reports, just lower half of the body is injured.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, broken kneecap.
Right. No, it's definitely, look, the guy is struggling. The one thing I will say about him struggling is we mentioned as one of the guys who can be in that role, in that ninth inning role, is Ellen Betances. Well, he also, before the All-Star break and then just after the All-Star break, was freaking terrible. Could not throw a strike, could not do anything. We were calling for his head as well.
Yep.
And he figured it out.
Yeah.
So Girardi is right, I think, to a point in the sense that these guys will figure it out eventually. I do believe Chapman will be fine eventually. But send a message, at least. Send a message that you're not going to tolerate struggling as much as you do. Throw the ball over the plate.
Do you feel confident when Chapman comes in?
No. No, hell no. But I didn't feel confident when Betances came in either. I was like, oh, here we go again.
I had but Betances would still go out there and like strike out the side, even if he was like walking people. And we have, again, we have stats that back up what we're saying that we'll get to in a few minutes with Dom. But Chapman, the nuts and bolts of it is he's not getting the same swings and misses.
Right.
That's a problem.
That's a big problem. And he was throwing, he gets a little slider happy now. And we saw what happened there.
Betances at least. Yeah, he would walk people, and that's infuriating, but then he would strike out the side in that inning. He would still be able to get guys to swing and miss. So I still had confidence, like, okay, he just needs to, like, figure his control stuff out. Chapman might just be hittable at this point. I don't know. Your boy Aaron Hicks has come back from the DL and been a nice spark plug for the Yankees.
I labeled him a godsend on Twitter.
You were not confident in him coming back, because I said, this was back when Clint Frazier was healthy. Well, the Yankees have Frazier, Hicks, Ellsbury, Gardner, Judge. And you were like, well, we don't know. Aaron Hicks. I'm not buying Aaron Hicks. Like, he might suck when he comes back.
Yeah.
I mean, the batting average isn't there, but he's got two homers. He's made three great plays in the outfield.
Yes.
He looks like the player he did when he went down in June, which is pretty crazy because he missed 6 weeks.
No, it's true. And I think I'm very hesitant to buy into a guy that was just as bad as he was. And then to give me half of the year, I don't know, I didn't buy it. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe my own eyes.
I don't blame you.
But at the same time, what pushed me to that was towards the end, before he was put on the DL, he really was struggling. I mean, if you remember, he was batting, 320, 330, and that average dipped way down to in the 280s, and it was bad the last 2 weeks.
Judge knows the feeling.
Judge knows the feeling. What it could have been is it could have been an injury that was lingering. I mean, that very well could be. And maybe that was just, you know, showing me that it was fool's gold at that time. But look, am I complaining about it? Hell no. He's been phenomenal. The dude has been, I mean, the throw to get Eduardo Nunez out at third was just amazing. I mean, like, that was the greatest.
But also, Nunez is an idiot.
I'm so happy he did it. It was in the Herald because I see the freaking Boston papers up here saying that he'd do it again the next day was his comment afterwards. So Nunez. I hope he does. Yeah, I hope he does. I hope he does it every time. But yeah, no, he's been phenomenal. He made that great play when he was in center, I think, made that play towards the wall.
That was diving Sunday night.
Yeah, great play. And yeah, he's been hitting. I mean, he's hitting for power. You can tell the confidence is there. And I think that's huge with him.
Pimped the shit out of the home run last night.
It was Griffey-like. I mean, he did drop the bat. It was like a nice little drop.
Not last night, Monday night.
And then a little stroll, little walk down the line.
He had the bat drop like Griffey did.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw someone.
I think Boone called that out, actually.
I saw someone compare it to Griffey's swing. And Griffey is like the pinnacle of swings, though.
Yes. Well, it was the end of it. It wasn't the full swing. It was just the kind of pip at the end. But look, the confidence is there. And I think we all know what a great golfer he is. And what a great athlete Aaron Hicks is. And A-Rod talks about...
Where did you hear that?
Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, okay. He's pretty good. He's pretty good at baseball analysis.
He had it scripted in front of him, and he robotically told me that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's an athlete, and I think when this guy has the confidence that he can play baseball at a high level, I mean, maybe he believes it.
So he needs to play every day right now.
Yes.
Judge has still been playing every day.
Yes.
We don't agree with him batting in the three hole, but he's so right now the rotation is Judge and Hicks plus Gardner and Ellsbury. That's what it seems to be anyway, because Gardner's sitting tonight against the Mets.
Yeah, it's interesting that Ellsbury is getting Ellsbury's been hot.
Gardner's not been hot.
Gardner gets very hot, then goes down.
Up here, down here.
So maybe for the last 3 weeks when we need him the most, he's gonna be on fire. And Ellsbury will fall away. Ellsbury, you know, he usually has like 2 weeks where he gets hot, maybe twice during a season. He did it last year. Remember when there was the whole, what were we calling them? It was chaos on the base path when Gardner and Ellsbury for like
2015.
The first 2 years ago when they were phenomenal. It was like three weeks.
There was a 3 week period in late April and early May.
They were awesome.
2015.
Yeah.
When Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury were a dynamic duo.
Yep. That's
what $153 million gets you. Good job, Cashman.
Hey. That's what it is. But now maybe we're seeing a little bit of a spurt. Look, I don't care. He hit a home run last night. That was probably the best thing he'll ever do.
Every time you bash Ellsbury, people always say that, hey, don't you remember that grand slam he hit in the 9-1 comeback against Baltimore? And I say to that, no, I don't, because all I remember is Castro down on one knee and Matt Holliday getting doused with the Gatorade. I don't remember shit about Jacoby Ellsbury because he is the most forgettable player in Yankees history.
Well, also because we want to forget about him as well. I mean, the fact that we want to forget about this guy doesn't lend well for him, for us remembering any good moments, because all we're going to do is talk about the bad ones when he's gone.
Gary Sanchez, since being benched, has actually turned it around.
Dude loves August. Dude loves the end of the season.
Right, yeah. 341 with 7 extra base hits since August 1, and we obviously know that last August he went on a tear as well. He got benched for his lackadaisical catching.
He still can't squeeze a ball. How many balls go past him when nobody on base?
You know what I've noticed? At least he's in better position to, like, block the ball now. At least he's giving an effort. He wasn't giving an effort beforehand.
Dude, I don't know how the pitchers didn't just completely get on him for doing it. It's when the
maybe
when
they
he
were.
Comes
Who
out.
Who knows? Maybe they were.
I don't know. I feel like we would have heard about it. There would have been whispers of some kind of discontent between the pitching staff and Sanchez. But, I mean, it got to a point where the guy was just, I mean, flat out terrible. And he's still not squeezing balls. I wonder what his frame rate is. I'd like to see what that is. Someone look that up. Frame rate Gary Sanchez this year. I bet it's awful. I bet it's absolutely horrible. But the guy is hitting now, and honestly, if he's hitting, a lot of that can be forgiven. Unless it costs you a game in a crucial situation, which it probably will at some point.
Well, here's the thing. I don't want to have to bench Gary Sanchez every time we want him to start producing. Because he was also in an offensive slump before he got benched.
That's true.
So, and don't you remember in the minors?
He had attitude problems.
Attitude problems when he was in Trenton. He got basically, like, slap on the wrist.
Wasn't he held out of the Futures game or
something? Something like that.
Both of them had that.
I think Mateo was held out of the Futures game, but Sanchez was essentially punished. And then he turned it around. Are we going to have to punish Gary Sanchez every year to get him to focus? Is that, like, a thing?
Well, I always think of this every time I see Sanchez when he's struggling or people are like talking about him. I don't know if you remember this video he had on Instagram when it was his birthday, and he had the cake on the table and like everybody was dancing and everybody was like singing happy birthday, and he's just sitting there like this. He's just like kicking back and be like dance, dance, dance. I feel like that's how he expects people to do things for him, and he's like, I've been good my whole life. I'm probably gonna be good for the rest of my life.
Well,
if I have some bad times, that's fine. If I don't try, that's fine. I think he's got to grow up still. I think he has some maturing to do, and I think that's what the biggest thing is.
I thought his daughter had him grow up. That was the whole story, that his daughter is the reason he grew
up. Yeah, changed it. I mean, it does change you. I can attest to that. I can actually speak to that.
Right.
It does change your outlook on things because you have another human being eventually going to be looking up to you and looking at who you are and what you do.
Maybe Sanchez needs to slip another one past the catcher to refocus his life.
Get a
girl pregnant.
Yes, I understood.
Saying.
Yeah. I thought you meant that. Then I thought you meant literally. Now I'm back with you. I think that might need to happen. Maybe he needs a second one.
Someone pop a hole in one of his condoms.
Gary Sanchez does not use condoms.
Last bit before we end this part of the podcast. Is that you stumbled upon some numbers on Tanaka today.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday.
So, since May 26th, Tanaka has a 3.99 ERA and a 47.6 ground ball rate, which is essentially what he was before.
That's good Tanaka.
Like, good Tanaka numbers. And his last 9 starts, a 3 ERA flat, 57 innings pitch, 65 strikeouts.
Now, what was your reaction when you saw those numbers?
I don't believe it. Someone doctored the numbers.
Right.
Fake news. My reaction was fake news.
It was my reaction, too. I actually saw this on MLB Trade Rumors on one of their articles. I have not fact-checked it. I have not gone to Baseball Reference and fact-checked it. To me, that was good enough. It was some proof that I had that he is not injured, that he just has fatigue. The guy has been phenomenal we're looking at it since May 26th.
You didn't even believe the numbers when you saw them. So you were watching him pitch and you didn't think he was a good pitcher.
No, I thought he was less than good.
Bad. Maybe
the eye test was telling me that he wasn't. I mean, we knew he was better than he was in the first month and a half.
Okay, but
he was freaking awful.
Yeah, anything is better than,
besides
than
that
six earned runs in the one inning.
Besides the start in Boston, which was strange.
But the numbers show he's been a very good pitcher in his last 9 starts.
Right.
But the eye test shows he's been not a good pitcher. Like, I watch him pitch and maybe it's just like I'm scarred from his early starts or something like that. But also, he's been hit. Like, I've seen him get hit.
What I think he also did is he clustered the good. When you're looking at some of the really good starts, he had, 12 strikeouts, 15 strikeouts. He was clustering a lot of that stuff.
Tampa start.
So when he had a couple good starts, like, the dude went deep into the game, clustered them, so that can probably skew the numbers as well for when you're looking at the entire picture. So, yeah, when you're looking at the overall thing, you're like, okay, that's strange. I would have never guessed that he was at a 3 R. I wouldn't have guessed that he was below 4. I am glad that there was 3.99 because that helped my case. It looks better.
That's bullshit.
It's like,
see, that, you know what that is? That's payback for when he pitched 199
points. I knew you were going to say that. That's exactly what it is. Little bit of payback. Little bit of sweet payback. But yeah, I mean, the numbers are saying that now, because of his fatigue, that he is hurting the team, where both of us actually agreed that it's not that big of a deal. When we saw it go across the bottom line that he was hurt, when we saw the news come in, I had a very similar reaction. Not the same, similar reaction to the way I did with Michael Pineda. And they are very different pitchers.
Would I rather have Tanaka pitching versus like Luis Sessa? Of course I'd rather have Tanaka pitching. But I still am not, like, I don't consider him to be one of their...
Well, he's one of their top three pitchers.
Is he?
I mean, by default... Are we going to say CC is? Because
I don't know.
They're all in there. There's like a handful. Like, throw some dice.
Flip a coin between CC and Tanaka, in my opinion.
Probably. And news on CC, throwing again, coming back possibly. Maybe maybe that injury was nothing. Maybe the fact that he said his knee felt the worst that it's felt in 2 years, 3 years, that's a good thing? Because I would have thought it would have been a much longer. When he said that, to me, that was this dude calling himself out. My knee's bad. I think
because there was no structural damage beyond what was already damaged, he just blasted it with a bunch of painkillers, and he's going to go out there and
until he can do that again. Yeah, because at the end of that painkiller, when that cortisone runs out,
I think it's probably will last until the end of the season, and he might retire. Who knows?
Yeah,
he's got a podcast now. He's a competitor.
He is a competitor. Him and Russo.
Tanaka, though, we'll see if he comes back healthy. You say this proves he's been healthy. That doesn't prove shit.
Oh, it proves health. Complete. He's averaging more than a strikeout per inning. Healthy.
I don't think so.
Strong. Not sad. Strong.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for this segment. Thank you guys for tuning in on Periscope.
We're going to do this more often. Lots of good stuff coming forward.
Yes.
September 30th.
September 30th.
So we are finally, I've obviously been pretty busy lately. I've been having a lot of shit going on, to say
good
the least.
Shit.
A lot of good shit, a lot of shit, a lot of things that are just happening in my life. So we're trying to work out some stuff. I have practically everything worked out. Andrew and I have been working on the details of this, the event. We will release tickets this week. Make sure this is still happening, 100% still happening. So September 30th, and I guarantee, Scott Reining guarantee, we will be in the thick of a pennant race. It will be a very meaningful game.
I'm having Greg Bird jinx flashbacks, dude.
I don't jinx things.
Did you see Greg Bird coming back? We're got to talk about Greg Bird. Okay. Greg Bird is coming back next week. Maybe.
That's what people say.
If I'm Greg Bird, I'm not giving a timetable on anything.
It's not him doing it. Everybody else is doing it.
Hoke tweeted that Greg Bird thinks he can be back next week.
Oh, boy.
If I'm Greg Bird, I am keeping my mouth shut, and I am going out there and just trying to produce the best of my abilities.
Susan Waldman said he's hitting the ball like old Greg Bird, if that's a thing.
Last night, Sterling...
Is 2015 second half the old Greg Bird?
Last night, Sterling had the Yankees lineup for the next 10 years of Judge, Bird, Sanchez, righty-lefty-righty, 30 home runs each every year.
I mean, that's how it's written, right? That's how it needs to be.
You say it's Scott Reining guarantee. That's a John Sterling guarantee.
Take that to the bank.
Better. All right. Stay tuned for the stats segment. Periscope, thanks for joining. And I can smell it. Deep down they jealous. That'll never sell us what they used to tell us. Shout out to all the fake fans. To the dreamers that can make plans. Stick to them and then make grants. Joining us on the podcast now is It's Your Boy Dom. You heard him a couple weeks ago. That was actually the episode, Scott, when you just had Kemp.
Yes.
So, Dom, welcome back.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me back on.
So what we're going to do is a quick stat segment like we did last time. I think the people were calling for it. You were a big success on the first one.
Cool. Love to hear it.
All right. We want to get into it?
Yeah, I'll get right into it. Why not? So obviously, first and foremost, I guess we'll go with Chapman. He continues to struggle. It started with him walking those first three batters on Friday night. The last 23 batters he had faced before that, no walks, no earned, 8 Ks. He squeaks his way out of a bases loaded, nobody out jam. He can thank Aaron Hicks for that one. And then he gives up the home run to Devers, blows the save on Sunday night. And then obviously last night gives up another homer to a rookie. The home run to Devers is actually the first he's given up to a left-handed batter since some dude named Luke Scott in 2011.
Orioles. I remember Luke Scott. Orioles.
Really?
Yeah, he played for the Baltimore Orioles.
This is an age thing.
Then I think he went to – I think he might have had a cup of coffee with the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
I was like 14 in 2011.
God damn it.
That's your prime. That's your sports prime. You're supposed to remember everything at that point.
Then I guess I'm going to get grilled for that one, huh?
But that's
a long time without giving up a home run. That was his fourth blown save of the year, most blown saves in his career since 2013, which he gave up 5. That's his career high. And so it's really looking like he's going to probably exceed that. Hopefully not, but things aren't looking too hot. And then Rosario took him the other way on a slider to right field. Both of these homers were the first that he's given up since the Rajay Davis homer in Game 7. And the biggest thing for me with Chapman, I don't know about you guys, but as soon as he stepped into that game Friday, it was a big moment, debatably as big, and obviously not as big as World Series Game 7, but like first time in the thick of a pennant race, Yankee Red Sox, and he did not look comfortable.
So what you're saying is that Chapman is soft, not built for the big lights, the prime time, the October cold, ready to go baseball. Is that what you're saying? Sounds like that's what you're saying.
I'm saying he quacks in the big moment. He's not a big moment guy.
Well, that's not good news. That's not something we need to look forward to. I'll tell you one thing that was surprising to me just looking at these numbers and hearing what you had said. I'm a big eyeball test guy. I like to make assessments off of what I see. And when you said that the last 23 batters he faced, the fact that he had no walks, no earned runs, 8 Ks, that was surprising to me because what I can remember is Chapman struggling. So kind of like the Tanaka numbers, but completely opposite of what Andrew and I just talked about. Those numbers were surprising to me. I actually thought they'd be worse.
Well, you know what it is with Chapman? He, for a while, he couldn't get in a rhythm, right? He came back from the DL and they were using him sporadically. The Yankees didn't have many leads. They couldn't even get to Chapman. But once they started using him more regularly, I think he kind of found a rhythm. But yeah, like you said, Dom, Friday night he comes in and he walks the bases loaded. Are you kidding me? How do you walk the bases loaded?
See, that's the problem. The fact that he didn't walk anybody for 23 batters before before Friday night is just crazy to me because dude has been, it seems like all year he's been all over the place. It seems like in my head that his control has not been there for the long term. So that was extremely surprising.
Dom, I know you have a stat in here about contact percentage because that, I think, is the biggest thing with him. So what is that?
Yeah, he had a pretty drastic increase since the start of the 2016 season. At the beginning of the 2016 season, he had a 69.7 contact rate, and that's now up to a 79.8 contact rate as of last night. So I think what it boils down to is that, you know, anybody can hit that 103-mile-an-hour fastball when it's at the belt, you know, right down Main Street. And then if he continues to fail in locating the slider and the changeup, he's just going to get hit. But again, like you said, he faces the 23 batters. He looks like he's on a roll. We're going to face the Red Sox. It's a huge game, huge series. And then he just gives it up. It's hard to pinpoint.
So this might be a stupid question, but is contact percentage any time a batter makes contact, even if it's a foul ball?
Yes. Yeah. Contact so rate.
That is also just means more pitches, more deeper counts, more everything, because he's not getting swings and misses. 10% is a significant number.
Especially when it's a significant number also because, I mean, he's a closer. The amount of batters that he's facing, the type of pitcher that he is, I mean, he's always been a swing and miss guy. So when you're missing by 10%, it's a large difference because that's what you've made your mark on. That's what you've made your career on is swing and miss. And like you said, and we've talked about this for countless times and countless episodes about the fact that everybody now has a guy who throws 100 miles an hour. So a lot of these minor league guys, this isn't anything new. When they come up to the majors, they've seen 100. They've seen, you know, 100 plus before. You got to have the location. You got to have that second. And most of the time, you got to have that third pitch. But especially that second pitch, you need to be able to locate it. And the batter needs to think and fear that second pitch as much as your fastball, or they're just going to sit, especially if you're missing the location, they're sitting dead red.
Absolutely. And now we see his ERA jump up to 3.89. And when I was going through the numbers today, I was like, you know what? What is Tyler Clippard's at? And Tyler Clippard has a 4.18 ERA, which is dangerously close. But Tyler Clippard has a 0.5 WAR, which is higher than Chapman.
So I saw you tweet that out today, and that's a great like tweet to put out there because it's headline grabbing. But also remember that Chapman missed, what was it, like a month of the season?
It was a month, yeah.
Chapman's not been good, but Clippard has been dog shit.
Yeah. Clippard's thrown like 47 innings. I think Chapman's thrown about 34.2, I want
to
say.
Clippard's now going to take Houston to the World Series, right?
He's on Houston now?
You didn't know. Scott's been.
When the hell did that happen?
He got traded to Houston.
Why did Houston want him?
So my nightmare is the Yankees versus Astros in the playoffs and Clippard beats the Yankees in like a big spot. That is literally my nightmare.
I could see it happening. All right, what you got next?
So despite Chapman's struggles, the rest of the bullpen has been pretty unreal. Chad Green is the leader in WAR at 1.5. 71 Ks and 48.2 innings pitched is pretty ridiculous.
That's filthy.
Filthy, absolutely filthy. He's made a big jump since he got called up. Adam Warren's the same way. He's Mr. Consistent. 50 innings pitched to 1.80 ERA. And then D-Rob and Canely, since the trade, have both been solid, 1.32 ERA and a 1.64 ERA respectively there. And then Betances, you know, a lot of people, I think, on Twitter are like, oh, my God, because he's just like Chapman where, like, it's a heart attack when he comes in because he has those 33 walks and the 45 innings pitched. But he's been really, really good as of late. So on the year now, he's got 79 Ks and 45 innings pitched. But now I think the biggest debate that everybody's kind of having across Yankees Twitter and that I know you guys just had on the Periscope is who do you bring in the closer role?
Yeah, like I was saying, like all those numbers laid out, those are all closer caliber numbers.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
That's why there's no right answer. That's why it doesn't need to be one guy. It can be whomever is hot, whomever is ready. It can be a committee.
Don't say it.
It's not going to be.
Don't say it.
But it can be.
It's not going to be a closer by committee. Girardi can't manage a bullpen when there is a closer. If he has a committee, are you freaking kidding me?
The bottom line is that they have the personnel to put anybody in that ninth inning. The fact that Betances has done it before, the fact that D-Rob has done it before, obviously put them on the forefront. To me, the answer is one of those two. It's a three-headed monster.
Well, we say answer. I don't think they're taking Chapman.
They're not going to.
Dom, do you think they're taking Chapman out of the closer?
No, absolutely not.
And by they, Girardi.
Well, no, absolutely not. I heard Scott saying earlier on in the podcast, you know, he calls him Chappy, like he's buddy. He's got the $86 million price tag on him. I just don't see him coming out of that role. And I think Chapman's good enough where, yeah, sure, he can turn it around. But, I mean, every sign is pointing the other way. And you have D-Rob, who basically replaced Mariano and did a good job for the Yanks when he was gone and when he was hurt with the ACL tear way back when. So yet again, I don't think you can go by a committee because I think Joe Girardi would have a aneurysm looking at that binder trying to figure that out.
All right, what do we got next?
So Sonny Gray, 9 straight starts of at least 6 innings pitched and 2 earned or less. All 3 have been with his last 3 have obviously been with the Yanks. The only person with more in a row is Aaron Nola. He's got 10, and he also just edged out Scherzer, who had 8. Finally picks up his first win as the Yanks score 4 times as many runs as they did the first 2 times he took the mound for them. No defensive debacles.
Hold on. 4 times as many. They scored 0 before.
So they scored 0 runs. So yeah, that's just a big exaggeration right there. I try to make that sound as exaggerated as possible.
4 times 0 is 0 though.
But the earned runs thing.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Not
a big math guy, just a big stat.
It's all good, man. We all know what you meant.
Earned runs thing though is like it's crazy because Sonny Gray has been bitten by unearned runs all season.
Yeah, he has been. I know what did they have? Three errors in that first game?
In the first inning.
I think we talked about 13 unearned runs on him this season, which is the most in the majors.
We all thought that, or Sonny Gray at least thought that when he came to the New York Yankees, a contender, one that's you know vying for a pennant and definitely a wild card, that he would get some support behind him. Granted, it didn't start out well with all those errors in the first inning of his first start, But you can see what kind of a pitcher he is. The bottom line is the guy, the numbers that you threw out there, that he's got 9 straight starts, 6 innings pitched, and 2 earned runs. Like, that's exactly what you want. That is the epitome of a quality start and a guy that we, the Yankees, absolutely need at the top of the rotation to solidify.
That's consistency.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, Scott and I talked in the first part of this podcast about how Tanaka's numbers overall look decent, but, like, he's not been consistent. So you can never go out there and rely on Tanaka to give you a quality start. Whereas Sonny Gray, you can at least assume he'll go out there and be who Sonny Gray
is. He's got a baseline, whereas Tanaka was really like hardcore ebb and flow. Yeah, it was all over the place. And you cannot have that for a guy, especially when you're going into the potential of us playing in a wild card, maybe a one-game play-in. That's pretty much what it is. And, I mean, you can't rely on a guy like that. So the fact that you know kind of what Sonny Gray is going to give you, Severino, I think there's a decision to be made, obviously down the road, knocking on wood, that if there was a game like that, that would be a very tough decision to make between Sonny Gray and Severino.
So you also have some stats on his strikeouts and specifically his slider?
Yeah, his slider is clearly his best pitch, I think. It gets him the strikeouts, and it can be attributed to the high ground ball percentage, which is 56% for Sonny. And hitters this year against the slider hitting 148 with 13 hits, 1 homer, 48 Ks. Slider accounts for 43% of his strikeouts this year. So that seems like his out pitch.
Yeah, and there was I saw you have in the notes as well, and I saw this interview after the game when he was in the locker room talking about that slider. And, you know, it didn't seem like anything was different. Like, he just kept throwing it. Some of the beat guys were asking him if he had changed anything, if he had mechanically, and it was the answer was no. Just kind of stuck with it. And I think this is still the process of you know, when we talked to Joe, is that his name? Joe from Oakland, about Sonny Gray and how he was hurt over the past couple of years. It seems like he's still trying to find a lot of these secondary pitches and at least get the feel back for that slider. And this is a hell of good news, knowing that slider is coming around, because he's got 4 pitches, and when the slider's going as well, that's dominant stuff.
So he's throwing the slider a lot, but can Gary Sanchez catch it?
That's a good question.
That's probably the best question.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of Gary Sanchez, beautiful segue.
And the answer is no.
Me.
The answer is no.
That is a professional segue by me. Dom, what do we have next?
Very professional. So since August 1st, Gary is 15 for 44 with a .341 batting average, a .1165 OPS, 3 doubles, 5 homers, 8 RBIs. It looks like he's on his way, or he won't repeat last year's August, but I mean, if he can even, he's almost halfway there, honestly. So, you know, you got to hope that happens. Last year, .389 in August with 11 homers, 21 RBIs, and with his homer, I guess 2 nights ago when he hit his 20th, that marked him as, with just him and Johnny Bench, as catchers with multi 20 homer seasons before the age of 24. So he's in real good company there.
I think we need a little perspective on Gary Sanchez, because we've gotten on him a lot. He's gotten criticized a lot for his catching, and also people complain about his mountain visits all the time. He missed a month of the season, and his offensive numbers are up there with the best catchers like in the league. So I think we need a little perspective on where Gary Sanchez is at this point in his career.
As a player, you mean?
Yeah, as a player.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, look, I know we get frustrated with him behind the plate, and I think it's less because of the errors, the actual physical errors, but more because of the lackadaisical way they happen.
Yeah.
Because it looks terrible. And when you're looking at a guy who doesn't seem to give a lot of effort behind the plate, when there's balls that he easily should block, then it's not the error, it's not the actual fact that the ball's going by him, it's the fact that he didn't get down and do it. And to me, that's an effort thing. So it's more of a mental makeup, and I think that's why he's getting ripped on it. If it was if there were a lot of balls going by him and they were almost justified or looked like he was giving a lot of effort, I think it would be a different story. But you're right, he's a young guy, he's mashing the ball, and he still has a hose and can throw out guys, and he's working on his craft. I get it. It doesn't escape the fact that we have to get on him for that defense. But he is hitting, and we all know that Gary is scary. Second half, humidity, he loves it. So that's it. I mean, hopefully he keeps it going back.
Well, it's humid down in the Dominican, so that's why it's used to August weather.
That's what I'm saying.
It's his natural climate.
Natural climate.
All right, what do we have for the last stat here?
Yeah, Judge ties Adam Dunn's strikeout streak. I was curious to see how the numbers matched up, and Dunn had a way better span, but he wound up hitting 204 on the year. So Dunn went 27 for 111, a 243 batting average, 8 doubles, 10 homers, 25 RBIs, 25 walks, 47 Ks. Judge has gone 20 for 110, hitting 182 with only 2 doubles, 6 homers, 13 RBIs, and 29 walks, and also 54 strikeouts. So
it's pretty crazy that it actually did take them almost the exact same amount of at-bats to get to this point as well. The numbers are staggering, in all honesty, and we would be crushing Aaron Judge right now if he had even a decent first half. But the fact that he came out and was Captain America, Mr. I can't do anything wrong in the first half, triple crown Aaron Judge, is why he's bought so much of an extended leash from Yankees fans.
So Judge barely made the starting right fielder job. He was competing with Aaron Hicks. Say Judge had this start to his season this year.
Yeah.
He'd probably be back. He would have been
back in AAA.
Definitely be back in AAA, and his major league career probably would never get off the ground.
Crazy. Crazy timing. But look, I have confidence personally. I don't think he's ever going to get back to that. I think that
was
the first
historic.
Half was like insanity.
Historic.
Yes. And he's not that player. Do I think he can be close to that player? Yeah, I do. I don't think he's going to hit for average. That was probably the biggest shock for me, was the fact that he hit for average at that time. The numbers are going to be there. The power numbers are going to be there. The runs batted in are going to be there. The walks are going to be there. But he's not going to hit. He's going to strike out a ton. And he's probably going to be, I always thought he would be like a 260, 270 hitter at best.
That's fine, though.
Right. You can totally live it. That, literally, right there, you're talking 270, 280 in that range. That's Dave Winfield.
Because he's also... Yep. He's also taking walks, which is, I think, important that he still has like 29 walks over this span, even though he can't hit the ball. He physically can't hit. He doesn't put the ball in play anymore. Yep. He either strikes out, hits it over the fence, or walks. So the ball is never among the fielders.
Right.
It's insane.
Yep.
Good job, Dom. Way to come back. Thanks. Strong follow-up performance.
So, Dom, did you have this, like, stats, like, nerdy type of thing in you before this podcast, or did you just feel like, I'm gonna take the stats head on here?
A little bit, I guess. It's kind of hard to say, but then I just kind of, I kind of like doing it. I'm all up in the Fangraphs, the Baseball Reference. I'm a full-blown nerd.
I love it. All right, we appreciate it, Dom. Well, I'm sure you'll be back on pretty soon. Guys, thanks for listening to this episode. Tweet us at Yankees Podcast. You can submit mailbag questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Remember, we're going to do the voicemail line 646-480-0342, but also come strong with those mailbags.
I call people out for the voicemails before, and they delivered in a big way.
So we're calling people out for the mailbags because we got to get stronger there. Any last words, Scott?
Yeah, I am going to the game on Friday night. I will be at Fenway Park, which is literally a stone's throw away from where I'm sleeping every day right now. And I guarantee I'll bring a lot of video and do all sorts of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. I really hope that we sweep the Mets in city as well and go into that game strong. Maybe the Red Sox lose a couple and we're within striking distance again. So big, big, big series this weekend.
All right, we'll catch you guys in a few days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.